The sensible side of me should probably have been worried about whether the IT department scanned or read emails. But the part of me that was falling for the boss had lost her senses about a half hour ago. I responded with 5 words in the subject field. Check your top left drawer. My office door was closed, and I half expected it to fly open once Chase found my underwear in his desk. Instead, my email pinged. To Reese Ansley, from Chase Parker. Subject? Hard. They smell incredible. Get your ass in here now. I stopped in the bathroom on the way to Chase's office to freshen up. I'd decided he was going to get exactly what he'd said he needed in his office. My mouth wrapped around his gloriously thick cock. Looking in the mirror, I found my cheeks already flushed with anticipation. I gave my hair a good fluff, unbuttoned the top button of my blouse to show a hint of cleavage, lined my lips with Dr. Pepper-flavored chapstick, and popped a Listerine breath strip in my mouth before heading to the boss man's office. Chase was on the phone when I walked in, but he didn't need to say anything to me to reveal what he was thinking. His eyes followed my every step. Even though he didn't move, I felt like prey being hunted. My nipples hardened. What an extraordinary talent for a man to have, the ability to incite with only a look. I walked to the concealed control panel and pressed the button to sheathe the glass with the electronic blinds. Chase's eyes blazed as he continued his conversation, his voice growing thicker and deeper as the blinds moved across their track, each inch blocking out more of the outside world. When I shut and locked the door, he rushed whoever was on the line off the phone. Call ended. I took slow, deliberate steps toward his desk, one heel-clad foot in front of the other. Just as I reached the corner, there were 2 quick raps on the door and someone attempted to open it. I looked to Chase. Neither of us said a word, both hoping whoever was on the other side of the door would disappear.
Chase?
Samantha called as she knocked a second time. No such luck. He dropped his head and groaned before getting up. Don't move. I'll get rid of her. That task didn't prove as easy as he'd thought. Chase opened the door, but attempted to block the entrance to his office. That only made Sam more interested in what was inside.
What are you doing in there?
Working.
Are you alone?
None of your business.
She ducked under Chase's arm and saw me inside. Chase's voice indicated that his patience was wearing thin.
What did you need, Sam?
I was going to see if you wanted to grab a bite to eat tonight instead of tomorrow night.
I have plans tonight.
With Reese? He hesitated, and Sam decided his response for him. That's what I thought. I'll join you. How about 6? Chase grumbled something and let out a frustrated sigh.
Fine.
Shutting the door, he turned back to me, shaking his head.
I'm sorry.
I tried not to look panicked. She knows. What are we going to say?
He was suddenly serious as he gazed into my eyes.
You tell me.
Chapter 27. Reese.
I had no idea what I was going to say if Samantha asked point blank.
We were meeting her at the restaurant, a small Italian place a few blocks from the office that I'd never been to before. Clearly, Chase had. The manager, Benito, greeted him by name and showed us to Chase's special romantica table. It was in the back, in a dark corner by a large rustic brick fireplace. Chase pulled out my chair.
I take it you've been here before? He sat while the busboy set up a third place setting. We were a few minutes early, and Samantha hadn't arrived yet.
Sam loves this place. I'm pretty sure Benito thinks we're a couple. She likes to sit by the fireplace.
I was quiet, and I'm certain doubt registered on my face. Chase sat back in his chair.
She's my friend, and there's not much she can do about it if she doesn't like it anyway.
I frowned. It's so much easier for you. He leaned in.
Is that what you think?
You're the boss. No one is going to look at you differently or think your ideas were accepted because of who you slept with.
I get that. I can even understand it. So if you decide you'd rather keep things between us a secret, I'll accept that.
Chase edged closer.
But don't think this is easy for me. You're the first woman who's been anything more to me than a casual
He caught himself, stopping short of painting the visual he'd been about to throw out.
Anything more than a casual relationship in 7 years. And we're sitting down at a restaurant about to have dinner with my dead ex-fiancé's best friend, who is also the vice president of human resources for the company I own. A company where I entrust her to write policies such as the no fucking in the office policy I want to violate every goddamn time I look at you.
Chase looked away. I stared at him. It had never occurred to me how difficult it would be for him to come clean with Samantha. For me, it was a job and stupid mistakes from my past that formed my fears. For him, it was so much more. He just made everything seem so easy to do. God, sometimes I was a giant, selfish idiot. Before I could apologize and clear the air that hung heavy between us, Samantha was at our table. Chase stood until she sat. Nice to see you, Reese. Her face was friendly and warm when she greeted me. You too. The waiter quickly appeared to take our drink orders. Samantha glanced at the wine list and asked some questions about their selections. I looked from her to Chase and was caught in his troubled gaze. He looked hurt, angry, and deflated, and I hated that I'd made him feel that way. Our eyes stayed locked as Samantha finished talking to the waiter, and then she looked between us. So, what's new with the two of you? Making my decision, I extended my hand across the table to her. Not much, other than Chase and I are a couple. Sam took our news better than I had expected, and once dinner finished, Chase and I decided to stay at my place that night. When we arrived, I was surprised to find the new alarm system had been installed. Apparently, while I was busy being a vindictive bitch and stewing in my office half the day, Chase had been at my apartment having an added measure of security installed because he wanted to do something to quell my fears. My apology earlier in the day hadn't been enough to make it up to him. I went into the bathroom to wash up and came out to find Chase sitting in my bed with his back against the headboard. Pulling a knee up, I crawled to him, planting a kiss on his lips. When I moved to pull back, he stopped me by taking my face between his hands. Looking directly into my eyes, he said,
"Thank you."
I knew what he meant, but I pretended I didn't. I haven't even given you anything to be thankful for. Yet. He smiled, but continued with a serious tone.
It means a lot to me that you decided to tell Sam tonight.
You know, I realized tonight that it wasn't Sam I was afraid to tell, really.
No?
I shook my head. After the dumb mistakes I've made in the past, of course, the thought of a relationship with someone at work scares me. But I think what I've really been afraid of was feeling strongly enough about someone to be willing to purposely take a risk. I grinned. I tend to be risk-averse, in case you hadn't noticed. He attempted to conceal his smile.
I hadn't noticed.
Thank you again for having the alarm installed. It was really sweet of you. I kissed him again. Leaning my forehead against his, I whispered, "We're really doing this, huh? Going to be a couple out in the open with my long-lost middle school second cousin boyfriend who is also the boss man?" He pushed a lock of hair behind my ear.
"That's a mouthful. How about if we just call you my woman?"
"Your woman, huh?" His gaze roamed over my face.
"It's the truth. We've both been fighting it for different reasons, but you've been mine since I saw you in that dark restaurant hallway."
"You mean when you called me a bitch? I don't think that's quite how you won me over. It was a little after that, I'd say."
"Maybe for you, but you were under my skin from the first minute I laid eyes on you. I wanted to know what made you tick."
I cocked my head. "And have you figured that out? What makes me tick?" He flipped me on my back and braced himself over me. One hand trailed down my side, causing my skin to prickle.
"I'm still learning. Maybe we should play that little game you had me play once before."
"What game?"
"Be watched masturbating or watch someone masturbating."
"Ah, we're playing Would You Rather," Chase answered by rubbing his nose along my neck. "Are we talking about you I'm watching or someone else?" He stiffened and pulled back to look at me. "Kidding. I was kidding." I pecked his lips. "Watch you. I think I'd actually enjoy that." His face relaxed somewhat. So I continued the game with a real question. Lightly scratching my nails down his back, I said, "Office memo or PDA?" His response was quick.
"PDA."
"What kind?" He brushed his lips sweetly against mine.
"Like this."
"Show me again."
"This is fast becoming my favorite game."
"Mine too. I could spend all day doing this, but there were more pressing would-you-rather questions to attend to. When our kiss broke, I asked, "Give or receive first?" He grinned, but I didn't give him a chance to respond. Instead, I lowered my head down his body. Receive.
Chapter 28. Reese. Chase wasn't exactly good at following the script. The next day, we traveled to the office together early, as had become our habit lately. Only this time, after picking up our coffee, we rode the elevator together up to Parker Industries. I was acutely aware of his hand on my back as we exited. Even though it felt comfortable and natural to have him touching me, doing it in the office felt strange. And it wasn't a monumental gesture by any means. In fact, this morning we discussed that we were going to avoid any public displays of affection until after I spoke to Josh. So I was pretty sure Chase wasn't doing it intentionally. I owed my boss a certain amount of respect and wanted to let him know what was going on before Chase and I completely came out of the closet, so to speak. The plan was that I would talk to Josh this morning, and then Chase and I would go out to lunch together alone. We could be touchy-friendly in a way more than a typical boss-employee relationship, but there would be no statement PDA. Or so I thought. After I'd settled into my office, Travis found me in the break room making my oatmeal for breakfast.
"Morning, sexy,"
he flirted. I opened the microwave, removed my bowl, and stirred the oats. "Hi, Travis."
"When are you going to let me make you breakfast?"
I extended the bowl in his direction. You want to stir my Quaker oats?
At my place. The morning after. I make a mean eggs over easy.
I think your pickup lines need some work. Travis leaned his hip against the counter next to me.
Oh, yeah? Tell me what you like. I'll work on my game.
Well, for starters, we don't like you to assume we want to have sex with you. So opening with a line regarding the morning after is definitely a no-no.
So what's a good opening line?
How about something real? Complimenting something you actually like about the person. Travis's eyes dropped to my breasts, and he grinned.
I can do that.
I rolled my eyes. No, not like that. A compliment of a non-sexual nature.
That doesn't leave me with many body parts.
He looked me up and down, then pushed off the counter and stood tall.
Your toes always match your outfit. I like that.
Very good. Shows you're paying attention to details and doesn't make you sound like a pervert right off the bat.
Got it. So I'll leave off that I really want to suck them.
Of course, Chase walked in right at that moment. From the look on his face, I gathered he'd caught at least the last part of Travis's sentence. I really want to suck on them.
Travis,
Chase warned. Travis raised his hands in surrender.
I know, no fraternization.
Chase grabbed two bottles of water from the refrigerator.
Actually, we're rewriting that policy. Really? Have I mentioned how much I love working here?
Travis mused. Chase's eyes narrowed on Travis as he walked to me, offering a bottle of cold water. I took it, but Chase didn't let go as he spoke to Travis while looking at me.
If you love working here so much, perhaps you should spend more time working and less time harassing women who are taken. Taken? Who's taken?
Travis muttered. Rather than answer his question, Chase leaned in and kissed me on the lips. With a cheeky grin, he added,
12, good for lunch, Buttercup.
So much for subtlety and avoiding PDAs. I had thought Sam would be the person who wouldn't take the news well. I wasn't expecting it to be Josh.
This puts me in a very uncomfortable position, you realize.
He looked at me sternly. I'm sorry. I didn't intend for anything to happen between us. In fact, it was the last thing I wanted to happen at my new job. I really like working here. I like working for you. Josh sighed.
I've been with Parker Industries for 5 years. I started where you are and worked my way up. Chase is a very intelligent man, I'm sure you know that. He questions everything and has a strong hand in managing this business at every facet. It took me a long time to build a relationship of trust with him, one where he'll rely on my expertise even if he doesn't necessarily agree with my direction. I won't have you undermine that.
I was completely shocked. I won't. I wouldn't. He frowned.
I hope not.
We stared at each other awkwardly.
Does Sam know?
I nodded. She does. After a few seconds, Josh nodded hesitantly.
I appreciate you coming to me, at least.
Of course. He put his reading glasses back on, signaling that our conversation was over.
Why don't you finish compiling the focus group results, and we'll discuss them over lunch. My assistant will order us something in.
There was no way in the world I was going to mention that I already had lunch plans. Plans with his boss. I'd be canceling with a certain someone else. My text, letting Chase know things didn't go as well as I expected with Josh, went unanswered, as did the follow-up one I sent letting him know I needed to cancel lunch. I could see it had been read, but not even a quick K came back in response. I chalked it up to him being busy and dove into compiling the last of the data Josh and I were going to review over lunch. It was clear that I'd damaged my relationship with my immediate boss, and it was going to take some time to repair. Although we worked together right through lunch and for hours into the afternoon, things between Josh and me felt strained. It was as if he'd put up a wall of professionalism that wasn't there before. I hoped time would chip away at that wall once he realized I had no intention of undermining him in any way. As we cleaned up the paperwork we'd spread all over the table in his office, Josh said,
"Why don't you update the PowerPoint with our final slogans and packaging pics and email it to me?"
He caught my eye.
"I'll forward it on to Chase to take a look at."
I nodded. Just before I walked out of his office, he added,
"I'd like to keep communications through the proper chain of command in the future. I spoke to Chase about it as well this morning."
I nodded again. Although I thought it was unnecessary, I couldn't blame him for feeling the way he did. And I was curious at how his conversation with Chase had gone this morning. Normally, I heard or saw Chase around the office a few times during the day. But his blinds and door had been closed whenever I passed by today. His absence was noticeable, and by the time the end of the day rolled around, it had started to make me feel anxious. I waited until after the office began to empty out, after Josh, specifically, had left for the day before making another trip down the boss's hall. Just as I rounded the corner, Chase's door opened, and he walked out with a woman. I'd never seen her in the office before. She was attractive, with blonde hair pulled back in a neat ponytail that worked with her business casual look. They shook hands, and I assumed it had been some sort of a business meeting. Until she put her other hand on top of their joined hands. It was a small yet intimate gesture. She said something I couldn't hear, and I suddenly felt like I was intruding as I walked up to them, but I couldn't very well back up. They both looked over at me, realizing in unison that someone else was in the hallway. My heart started to beat a little faster. "Hi. I thought I'd stop by before I left since I haven't seen you all day." The woman looked back and forth between the two of us.
"I'd better run anyway. It was good to see you. Again."
Chase nodded. Oddly, I felt even more uncomfortable after the woman left. Yet in my internal battle between uncomfortable and curious, curiosity won out. "Who was that?" I asked, trying to sound casual. Instead of answering my question, Chase spoke curtly.
"I have a lot of work to get back to."
My uneasiness grew. "Okay. I'll talk to you tomorrow then, I guess." He didn't look at me as he nodded, and I jumped at the sound of his office door slamming behind him. What the hell is going on? I had a sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach that whatever it was, I was about to get hurt. Chapter 29. Reese. Chase didn't show up at work the next day. My uneasiness had worked its way into an overall sinking feeling, and my stomach was upset because I knew something had changed. I had no idea if it had something to do with the woman coming out of Chase's office last night, or maybe with the reaction Josh had had to our couple status news. But my anxiety over the unknown was killing me. There had been no response to my text checking in on him either. Even though my phone was set to make a sound whenever a new text arrived, I found myself checking it every 2 minutes. I was fast, losing the little focus I'd brought with me to work. A tiny voice in my head whispered, "See? This is what you get for having an affair at the office. Don't you ever learn your lesson?" I tried to ignore it. Toward the end of the day, I stopped by Chase's secretary's desk and attempted to sound casual. "Do you know when the boss will be back?"
"He didn't say. Just received a one-line email saying he wouldn't be in."
Her brows drew together, and she shrugged. "Not really like him.
I stayed at the office until after 7. Still, not hearing anything from Chase, I picked up the phone and called before I left. Voicemail answered on the first ring. Moving from anxious to worried, I sent another text. The second one never even showed delivered. Whatever was going on, his phone was off, and he didn't want to be reached. I struggled with what to do next. Show up at his house unannounced? We were in a relationship. It was normal for me to be concerned that I hadn't heard from him, right? Then again, if he'd wanted to hear from me, I would have spoken to him by now. Unlike him, I was exactly where I was supposed to be, and completely accessible in any number of ways. Text, voice, email, office phone. He could certainly reach me. Unless something was wrong. Oh my God. Something was wrong. What the hell was I doing sitting in the office? Practically sprinting to the subway, I hopped on the first train and traveled uptown. I rang the bell, but Chase's brownstone was dark. The mail hadn't been taken in for a day, maybe even two. Not knowing what else to do, I reluctantly went home after a while. First thing in the morning, I'd go see Sam if I still hadn't heard from him. I tossed and turned the entire night. Eventually, I took a shower and got myself ready, even though it was barely 5 a.m. I'd had my phone on the charger, and when I opened the text string I had with Chase, I noticed my messages from last night had been recently read. Yet there was no response. He must have plugged his phone in somewhere. Possibly home? My emotions swung back and forth like the pendulum on a grandfather clock. He was obviously somewhere that he could plug in his phone, so he could have called me to let me know he was all right. Yet, maybe he wasn't okay. Maybe he needed someone. Maybe that someone was meant to be me. And so, back uptown I went. The sun had just started to rise as I reached Chase's stop. This time, when I reached his brownstone, there was a light on inside, and mail no longer stuck out of the box hanging next to the door. I rang the bell and waited anxiously. After a few minutes, the door opened. I sucked in a breath and waited for Chase to speak. But he didn't. Even more heartbreaking, though, was that he also didn't open the door and invite me in. Instead, he stepped outside onto the stoop. Keeping distance between us, he stared off somewhere down the block, no place in particular. Chase? I took a step forward, but stopped when I smelled him. Alcohol teemed from his pores. It was then I realized he was wearing the same shirt and slacks he'd been wearing the last time I saw him in the office. They were a crumpled mess now, and his tie was missing, but it was definitely the same clothing. He still hadn't responded or looked at me. Chase, what's going on? Are you okay? The silence was painful. It felt like someone had died, and he couldn't say it out loud. Couldn't face it. Oh my God. Has someone died? Is Anna okay? The baby. He closed his eyes.
They're fine.
What's going on? Where have you been?
I needed some time alone.
Does this have something to do with the woman who was at your office the other night?
It has nothing to do with you.
Then what does it have to do with? My voice came out high and reedy, and it broke on a whisper. I don't understand. For the first time, Chase finally looked my way. When our gazes met, I saw so much in his eyes. Hurt, pain, sadness, anger. I gasped. Not so much because it scared me, but because I could feel the pain he was experiencing for whatever reason. My chest tightened and a knot swelled in my throat, making it difficult to swallow. Even though his body language was anything but welcoming, I reached out, wanting to offer him comfort. He pulled back,
as if my touch was fire. Chase? He shook his head.
I'm sorry.
I furrowed my brow, refusing to understand.
You're sorry? For what? What's going on?
You were right. We worked together. Nothing should have happened between us.
It felt like someone had backhanded me across the face.
What?
He looked down at me again, his eyes meeting mine, yet I felt like he still couldn't see me.
Why did he look so lost?
I hope you'll stay on. Josh thinks very highly of your work.
Is this a joke? What happened? I don't understand.
Chase's expression went from blank to hurt, and I suddenly wanted to see more of that on his face. I felt used and insignificant, ashamed, and I hated that he'd made me feel like that.
It was him who should be ashamed at how he was acting.
He hung his head, not facing me, like a coward.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry? I don't even understand whatever it is you're sorry for.
I'm not the right man for you.
I took a step closer, forcing him to look at me.
You know what? You're right. Because the right man for me would have the balls to at least give me the truth. I have no idea what happened, but I don't deserve this.
I saw a flash of something in his eyes, and for a half of a second, it looked like he was going to reach out to me. But he didn't. Instead, he took a full step back, almost as if he needed distance to keep himself from touching me. I began to turn around, wanting to get the hell out of there so I could disappear with some shred of my dignity intact, but then turned back.
You know the worst part of this? You were the first person who'd made me feel safe since I was a kid.
Chapter 30. Chase. 2 days ago. There's a Detective Balsamo here to see you? My secretary's face was wary when she came into my office. I had an 11 o'clock meeting I was already running late for after my director of marketing had interrupted my morning to tell me what he thought of my new relationship. This day was getting better by the fucking minute. Can you call R&D and tell them I'm going to need to reschedule? For later today? No. Leave it open as of now. She nodded. Should I send the detective in? Give me 5 minutes, and then she can come on back. I drew the electric blinds and opened a text message from Reese, canceling our lunch date. Could this day get any shittier? Perhaps I shouldn't have challenged the powers that be with that question. Nora Balsamo was the lead detective on Peyton's case. She was early 30s, slim, attractive, with blonde hair that was always pulled back in a ponytail. The first time we met, I'd looked right past her, literally over her head, and asked her captain for a more experienced detective. I never even gave her a chance. Those early days were definitely not my best. Looking back, I'd wanted everyone around me to pay, especially the cops. I blamed them for not doing more to help Eddie. Early intervention could have changed everything. Today, however, even though Peyton would never be an easy subject to speak of, I was in a better place, more accepting of how the past had shaped who I was today. I was pretty sure my therapist was driving around in a Range Rover from her hours spent making that acceptance happen a few years back. I stood when Detective Balsamo entered and walked around my desk to greet her. Nice to see you, Detective. She smiled. Is it? I'm pretty sure you've been avoiding me the last 2 weeks. I'd forgotten she called bullshit a sport. I chuckled. Maybe I was. I'm sure you're a great person, so don't take this the wrong way. But I never look forward to your visits. She smiled, and I motioned to the seating area near the windows. Can I get you something to drink? A bottle of water? I'm good, thank you. She sat on the couch. Have you been? Good. Really good, actually. I took the chair across from her and caught her looking over my shoulder out the window. It was impossible to miss Peyton's giant-sized face still painted on the building across the way. Her eyes returned to me without her asking a question, verbally, at least. The woman had a stealth ability to make me offer more than I ever wanted to. "We were actually in the process of planning a new marketing campaign," I said. She nodded and kept looking at me pensively. It was probably my own paranoia, but I always felt like I was being observed around cops. "So to what do I owe this in-person visit, detective?" She took a deep breath. "I have some news about Ms. Morris's investigation." At first, after Peyton was killed, I'd needed to talk about her case. So much so that I'd frequently shown up at the police station to run through things I'd remembered or to demand an update. After I started drinking heavily, those visits became daily and were more like the tirades of an angry person. I didn't sleep, didn't eat, drank alcohol in my Cheerios for breakfast, and often forgot to add the cereal. Eventually, Detective Balsamo showed up at my house at 5 in the morning one day, hoping to catch me sober, she'd said, and told me to stop coming down to the station. I didn't listen to her for a very long time. When I finally did, she promised if she ever had news about Peyton's case, she'd make sure I was the first to know. This morning was the first time I'd ever heard her say those words. Detective Balsamo cleared her throat. 2 weeks ago, a woman was assaulted pretty badly. Stab wound to the chest? Our eyes locked. Happened at a homeless camp uptown? The same one? No, it was a different one. Different precinct, too. That's why the detectives who caught the case didn't make the connection at first. The woman was out for a few days, but when she woke up, we found out she was a waitress. Turned out she used to stop at the makeshift camp after her shift and bring the day's leftovers from the place she worked. She was a do-gooder. Like Peyton? She nodded. When I heard that during our morning briefing, something clicked for some reason. So I had the medical examiner compare photos of the wound from the new case to the ones in Ms. Morris's case file. And it was a match? It was. The knife blade had a small nick in it, so it made a pretty distinct mark. So these kids are still at it? It's been 7 years. That was our original assumption. The same gang of kids we'd been looking for 7 years was still terrorizing homeless camps, and another bystanding victim was caught in the crossfire. But then we got to talk to the victim, and we found out it wasn't a gang of kids that attacked her. This was what she needed to tell me in person. What was so important, she had to show up at my office unannounced. She knew it was something I wanted to hear, needed to hear. The rage I'd felt for so long after losing Peyton was back and coursing through my veins. My hand shook, and I clenched my fist to steady it. Who was it? She took a deep breath. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, Chase, but it was Eddie. It had been more than 2 hours. I'd made the detective go through all of it with me again and again. I paced back and forth like a caged lion trying to figure out my attack. Somehow it had been easier to imagine that a group of drug-addicted teenagers from screwed-up homes was responsible for something so violent. The world was a much more fucked-up place when a homeless man people had spent years trying to help was guilty. I didn't want to believe it was true. "Where is he?" I demanded. "Who, Eddie? He's in custody. I need to see him. That's not a good idea. I knew this wasn't going to be easy for you to hear, but I'm hoping that eventually, knowing the case is closed and her killer will be locked away for the rest of his life, will help you move on." But I had begun to move on. This felt like I was being robbed of light I'd only just begun to see after years of walking in a dark place. I scoffed and then began to laugh maniacally. Move on. I was moving on. Detective Balsamo's jaw dropped. I didn't know. I'm sorry. Why? Why did he want to hurt Peyton? She swallowed and looked at her feet. When her eyes raised to meet mine, her voice was small. He was in love with her. Apparently when he saw that she'd gotten engaged, it set him off. He's not stable. Is he even fit to stand trial? We've had two psychiatrists evaluate him. Both say he's capable of knowing right from wrong. He has obvious mental health issues, but he meets the standard of fit for trial. He confessed? Yes. It's not perfect. We need to piece together 12 hours of interrogation with one- and two-word answers. But it should stick. And if it doesn't? With the victim's testimony, he's going down for first-degree assault or attempted murder on the waitress. From Ms. Mortis's case, the DA says there's enough physical evidence to put him away without the confession. He was found with a knife on his person, and we interviewed the workers at the shelter. A few had seen him using the pocket knife to cut his food and remembered it. Apparently it was an antique, a rare officer's edition made of walnut. Walnut? I froze. Did it have initials on it? Why, yes, it did. How did you know? I ignored her question, needing my own answered immediately. My heart was beating 1,000 miles an hour. It felt like my ribcage was going to crack and explode from the pressure. Detective Balsamo stared at me, her brows drawn. She'd get her explanation after I got my answer. I needed an answer. What initials were on it? I asked. Seeming to sense my urgency, she reached into her pocket and pulled out her notepad. She flipped through the pages for a while, and I stood completely still. Every muscle in my body had locked. Eventually, she stopped and pointed to her pad. The initials were S.E. Chapter 31. Chase, 7 years ago. 27 stitches in his head. Peyton held Eddie's hand the entire time, even though I wasn't allowed within 2 feet. Somehow she'd managed to gain access to the no-people zone Eddie surrounded himself with, like an invisible shield. Looking over at her, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised. She was beautiful and soft, sweet and inviting. What man in his right mind would reject her touch? The ER doc, who'd sewed up Eddie's head, asked to speak to me outside the exam room. He's got a collection of fresh scars on his face and head, he told me as we stepped into the hall. This one was definitely made with a blade. The jagged skin slice is from a serrated edge, probably a kitchen knife, if I had to guess. If the slash had been a quarter inch to the right, he wouldn't have an eye right now. I looked back into the room. Eddie's stitches ran from his forehead down to his chin. His right eye was swollen shut from the beating he'd taken again last night. Eddie doesn't talk much, I explained. But we think it's a group of teenagers. Apparently it's a game they play. They earn points for damage they cause to homeless people. I heard about that on the news. Makes me scared for the future of our society. The doctor shook his head. Has he gone to the police? Peyton's tried to get him to, and she's gone herself a few times, tried to file reports on his behalf. They don't seem to care. Can you get him into a shelter? He goes for meals. That's how Peyton met him. She volunteers at the place he usually eats, but he won't stay the night. When the tables for dinner are all full, he takes his food and eats sitting in the corner, away from the people. Beds in the shelter are too close together for him to handle. Doesn't like people too close. He's going to get killed out there if this keeps up. He needs to protect himself at least. He doesn't have any defensive wounds on his hands and arms. He's not protecting himself? Doesn't look that way. He's either the aggressor, or he's cowering in the corner while someone kicks him in the head repeatedly. He's definitely not the aggressor. Then you might want to try to talk to him about defending himself, or he'll wind up with a cracked skull. I felt bad for Eddie. I did. But if I was being honest, that wasn't the reason I went down to the shelter the next afternoon. I went for Peyton. Okay, and also for myself. I needed this situation to get better. There was a construction crew opening up walls to expand my new office space, a photo shoot going on in a makeshift studio in the research lab, and I just hired 2 new employees this morning. Interest in my new products kept the receptionist busy all day long. I was drowning in work, yet here I was, going to talk to a homeless guy about self-defense. I knew Peyton had an audition and wouldn't be at the shelter. Figuring Eddie would pay better attention to what I had to say without any distractions, I arrived shortly before dinner service started and waited outside. He limped down the block, right on schedule. "Hey, Eddie, think we can talk a minute?" He looked at me but said nothing. This was going to be a real quick conversation with only one of us speaking. "Come on, let's grab something to eat before it gets busy inside and we can talk over dinner." I let Eddie lead the way to where he wanted to sit. Following dutifully, with my tray in hand, I walked to the far corner of the cafeteria-style dining room. I didn't sit directly across from him, unsure of the proximity he would be comfortable with. Instead, I sat diagonally across, even though there was no one else anywhere in the vicinity. "Peyton really cares about you," I told him. Turned out that was a good way to lead in. Eddie made eye contact, something he rarely seemed to do. Since I had his attention, I got down to it. "She gets really upset when you get hurt. How come you don't protect yourself, Eddie? You can't let these kids keep kicking you and hurting you." He dug into his food. Apparently, only the mention of Peyton was worthy of his full attention. So I used it. "Peyton wants you to protect yourself." Again, that helped him focus on me. "She wants you to cover your head when they hit you, or get out of there when they come. Can you do that for her, Eddie?" He stared at me. "Do you have anything to protect yourself? You're a big guy. Maybe a piece of metal? A pipe? Something you can keep in your bag to try to scare them away?" I was caught off guard when he spoke. "Knife." "Yeah." Eyeing his fresh stitches, I nodded. "They got you good, didn't they?" "Knife," he repeated. "That's why you need to protect yourself. The doc said you're not even putting your hands up, not shielding yourself from a knife." He repeated himself again. "Knife." It dawned on me that he wasn't telling me what happened. He was asking me for help. "You want a knife? Is that what you're telling me?" Shocked the shit out of me when he laid his arm across the table, palm up. "Knife." "I don't have a knife for you." I looked down at his hands. They were dirty and scarred. Even they had taken abuse. "Wait, actually I do." Reaching into my front pocket, I took out the small pocket knife I'd been carrying for as long as I could remember. It was an old, walnut-handled Swiss Army knife. I'd bought it at a garage sale when I was about 12. Etched into the wood were the initials S.E., and there was a small stress crack next to the E that made a perfect X the same size as the initials. The thing was old, and the blade had a chip. Basically, I'd bought it because it said sex on it, and I was 12. Over the years, I'd mostly used it for the bottle opener. I looked at Eddie and then at my knife, hesitating. Something about offering it to him didn't sit right, but it was the least I could do. He let me place it in the palm of his hand and close it into his fist. "Be careful. Don't use it for anything but protection. Okay, Eddie?" He never agreed. Chapter 32. Chase, now. 2 weeks post-Reese. I'd become Barney. Remember him? The guy at the bar the morning of Peyton's funeral who was too drunk to raise his head? "That's Barney," the bartender had said when I'd asked about him. "That's Chase." Me, the sole patron at the bar at 10:15 in the morning, nursing the end of my first Jack and Coke, the hair of the dog that bit me. The bartender was too busy taking in a keg delivery to notice I needed a refill. The Budweiser driver looked around as the bartender signed the invoice. His eyes landing on me, he frowned and then forced a sad smile. "Yeah, that's right. I'm Barney. Fuck you, buddy. Around 4, I was again all by my lonesome. A few old-timers had straggled in and staggered out throughout the day. But the day crowd was slim to none, which suited me fine. Jack was my only choice for company the last 2 weeks anyway. Carl, the bartender, attempted to strike up a conversation after returning to the bar with a crate filled with wet glasses from the back. For the past few weeks, all my answers had been curt. I thought he would have stopped trying by now. Not many early morning folks pay with $100 bills every day. He dried glasses with a hand towel and stacked them away under the bar. I'll bring my piggy bank tomorrow. Pay with change so I fit the part better. He squinted, looking me over. You could use a shave and a haircut, if you ask me. But your clothes are pretty nice, too. Glad I meet the dress code. I looked around the empty bar. You should think about getting rid of it. Might drum up some business. I sipped my drink. Carl shook his head. Got a good job? Own my own company. What are you, some sort of highfalutin stock trading type guy? Not exactly. Lawyer? Nope. Got a wife? I asked. Yeah, Mildred. Old bird, but keeps herself in good shape still. My company makes pain-free ladies' grooming wax, and some other stuff. Mildred is more my customer than you. His face scrunched up. Grooming wax? What the hell is that? Removes hair in places women don't want it. Bikini line, legs. I took out a wad of cash from my pocket and tossed $100 on the bar. Some women like to be bald down below, if you know what I mean. Are you pulling my leg? For some reason, that question reminded me of Reese and the first night we met, how she'd gone along with my bullshit stories. Suddenly, I couldn't sit on this bar stool anymore. Nope. I knocked twice on the bar. Same time tomorrow? I'll be here. At home, I was out of coke, so I reached for a glass, intent on pouring just straight Jack. Then it dawned on me. What the hell do I need the glass for if I'm not mixing shit? I took a healthy swig from the bottle and dropped down on my couch. The ache in my chest that I could usually dull at the bar returned when my eyes landed on Peyton's guitar. So I took another swig and stared at the guitar some more. That led to another swig, maybe two. Since my eyes were apparently unable to see anything else, I shut them, letting my head loll back on the top of the couch. An image of Reese filled the darkness. She looked so beautiful beneath me, smiling with her big blue irises. So I opened my eyes again and took another gulp from my bottle while staring at the guitar. As I swallowed, my lids drifted closed again. Reese bending over my desk, looking back at me while she bit her lip nervously and waited for me to take her. Another swig. Eventually I must have passed out, because I woke to daylight streaming in the window and the sound of my doorbell being pressed over and over again. The only thing that could have been worse than the two women I found standing on the other side of the door at 6 a.m. was if my mother had also been with them. I hesitated, and my sister Anna yelled, "I saw you look through the top of the door, jackass. Open up." Groaning, I begrudgingly unlocked the door. I attempted to impede their entry after I opened it, but the two of them walked right past me. "Come on in," I grumbled sarcastically. Sam's hands were on her hips. Anna handed me a giant cup of coffee. "Here, you're going to need this." "Can we do this later in the day?" "We don't want a chance you being drunk." Anna leaned in, took a sniff of me, and scrunched up her nose. Waving her hand in front of her face, she said, "Are you still drunk from last night?" I shook my head, walked back to the living room, and slouched into my couch. My head was pounding, and the last thing I needed to hear was whatever these two had come to say. They followed me. It was a mistake to sit in the middle. At least if I'd sat near one armrest, I couldn't be the middle of an estrogen sandwich. Sam started in first. This crap needs to stop. You're fired. You'd have to be a boss to fire me. Right now you're acting more like a little boy. Screw you, Sam. Screw you, too. Anna joined in. We gave you 2 weeks. That's all you're getting. How are you going to stop me from taking more time off if I want? Sam crossed her arms. We've made a schedule. For what? To babysit you. Until you come back to work and rejoin the land of the living, one of us will be following you around. I need Motrin. I stood and walked into the kitchen. To my surprise, my shadows didn't follow. Since the kitchen was empty and didn't have two women in it, I drank a few glasses of water and quietly attempted to get my thoughts in order. My peace didn't last for long. They took seats at the table and stared at me. Anna started the lecture. We left things too long when Peyton died. You lost years that you can't get back doing shit like this. We gave you 2 weeks to grieve your loss again, but that's it. Time's up. I'm a grown man, so act like one. Don't you have a child to take care of? Apparently I have two. Anna stood and walked over to me. My arms were folded across my chest, but she reached out and touched my shoulder. Her voice was quiet. It's a good thing. They caught the guy. I know you feel betrayed all over again, finding out it was a man she trusted and was trying to help, but it's the closure you needed, Chase. It really is.
If only that were the truth. If they'd caught the teens we'd all thought did it, maybe it would have been. Hell, even finding out it was Eddie. It would have been tough, but I think I could have eventually accepted it. But discovering that what happened to Peyton was my fault, that I literally gave the killer the knife he used to kill my fiancé, I doubted I would ever get past that. I didn't get closure, Anna. You don't know what you're talking about. If you did, you'd leave me alone.
So tell me then. Tell me what it is that's sending you off the deep end when I thought you were finally happy for the first time in years.
I looked into my sister's eyes. All I saw was raw determination. There was only one way to break it. You really want to know?
Of course I do. It's why I'm here. I want to help.
I turned around, opened the cabinet where I kept the liquor, and pulled out the first bottle my hand reached. Grabbing three glasses from another cabinet, I lifted my chin toward the kitchen table. Sit. 8 hours later, I called a car service to take Anna and Sam home. Neither was functional enough for public transportation. We'd spent the day mourning Peyton all over again, and after they found out about the knife, I believed they finally understood why I needed more time.
I love you, little bro.
My sister wrapped her arms around my waist and squeezed tight. Love you too, you pain in the ass. I kissed the top of her head. Sam waited on the front steps while Anna clung to me. The last time we'd really hugged like this was before the wake. I made sure the two of them got into the town car and watched it pull away. Even though I'd been drinking all day, I wasn't really feeling drunk. For a change, I went into the kitchen and started to straighten up after myself. When my bell rang again 5 minutes later, I was surprised to find Anna and Sam back at my door.
What did you forget?
Their arms were hooked, and they didn't attempt to come in.
Nothing, Sam said. We just wanted to remind you that we love you, and tell you we'll see you tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
What you shared today was horrible, but it didn't change anything. We're not letting you disappear off the grid again and drink yourself into a coma.
My jaw clenched. I knew they meant well, but I really just needed time. Don't do this to me.
We're not, Anna said. We're doing it for you, because we love you.
I stared at them until they said goodbye and started back down the steps. Sam turned as she reached the bottom.
Oh, and Reese's last day is Friday. She quit.